Peter at Global Spiritual Life at NYU, and this is Multifaithful, the podcast about religious diversity, multi-faith dialogue, and effing the ineffable. In this week's podcast, we are jumping into a new topic. We are going to talk about sports, which happens to be my favorite thing in the world to talk about, and how sports can be a method of peace building in areas of conflict. We are going to dive into an incredibly interesting organization called Peace Players International with its founder, Brandon Tuohy, talk about how they use sports as a method of conflict resolution throughout the world. Thank you for listening to Multifaithful, and now to this week's conversation. So I am joined today by Brandon Tuohy, the co-founder and executive director of Peace Players International, which is an amazing organization that uses sports as a peace-building tool in conflicts internationally. And I'm also joined by a student at NYU and a friend. Drew, you want to introduce yourself for people?
Hi, my name is Drew Uchelson. I'm a second-year MPA student here at NYU. I played baseball at Penn State during undergrad, and also have experience working at Nike and worked for 3 years at ESPN before coming to NYU.
So, Brendan, I actually remember the first time I heard about Peace Players was a couple years ago. Your organization was profiled in Sports Illustrated, and I immediately emailed your organization and just to learn more. I thought it was so interesting. And in doing this podcast, I've gotten to talk to a lot of people who bring different religious groups together, bring different groups together. But I've never actually gotten to talk to anyone about sports, which is pretty much my favorite thing in the world besides doing interfaith work. So I'm curious, how did you get the idea to start a peace-building organization that was going to be based on athletics?
Yeah, so I grew up, like most kids, playing sports. And I was very fortunate. I grew up in a neighborhood of Washington, D.C. that's pretty diverse. So kids from lots of different backgrounds and races, and spent a lot of time at the playground playing basketball. And on the court, it never really mattered if you were white or black or Jewish or what. The question was always, can you play? And I got two younger brothers, and we were able to make friendships with lots of different people through basketball and sport. And I think that's something that a lot of people share, growing up, and it's way as friendships are established and perceptions are formed through your experiences on teams. So I played basketball in high school, then played in college at Colgate University, and got the opportunity to play in Dublin, Ireland, after I graduated from college. And while I was over there, I was playing Ireland has a professional league with about 20 teams and two Americans. At that time, I'm not sure if the rule has changed, but two Americans per team. And the year I was over there was my youngest brother's senior year at high school at Gonzaga in the district where we all went. And every few years, the high school basketball team did a trip somewhere, usually around surface. So I thought, why not Ireland? And where I was in Dublin is about 2 hours south of Belfast, Northern Ireland, where, as you probably know, there's been a long-standing conflict between the Protestant and Catholic communities in Northern Ireland. And kids grow up separated by the neighborhoods they live in and the schools they attend and even the sports that they played. And basketball is one of the few neutral sports where neither side feels like the other side owns. So the thought was run some basketball clinics and camps, have Protestant Catholic kids there mixed on teams, and have the Gonzaga coaches and players help run it. So this was the spring of 1997. And my middle brother, who was at Catholic University at the time playing basketball, also came on the trip. So it was a great week. And my middle brother was like, wow, I'd love to do something like this when I graduate. His name is Sean.
Mm-hmm.
So I was only in Ireland for a year, came home afterwards to move ahead with my life. I ended up applying to law school, decided not to go. Actually, ended up getting another job, getting married. And during that time, my brother, after college, had gone over to Northern Ireland to play, but the plane never really worked out. So we ended up living in Belfast, working to bring basketball to Protestant Catholic communities there. And loved the experience. And while he was there, he befriended a police chief in South Africa. I'm sorry, a police chief in Northern Ireland, that had done work training police officers in South Africa. And they got to be really good friends. And My brother talked to him about his idea to start an organization using sport to bring people together. And the guy said, hey, I got a great spot for you, Durban, South Africa. So my brother came home that summer. It was the summer of 2000 and pitched the idea to me. And I looked around and didn't really see any other organizations doing it, at least not on a big scale. And didn't really understand why. So that was kind of the genesis of the idea.
So it's interesting. You said that there weren't too many, or you didn't see too many organizations doing work like that. What type of challenges are there in bringing communities together? And what's a typical reception that you get when you go into these communities and tell the adults that you want to use sport as a vehicle to teach kids team building and getting along with one another?
Yeah, I mean, the reception is different, and it's, you know, people have different responses to what we're trying to do. I think early on, I don't know how seriously people took us, whether they're in the U.S. or in South Africa where we really got started.
You think that's because it was sports?
But that's because we were young and probably seemingly naive and foolish, I would think. You know?
The beginnings of every good organization.
Exactly. Like, all right, whatever. But in South Africa, in Durban, where we really got started, the kids don't have much. And so my brother Sean would go knocking on doors. And, you know, Durban, obviously South Africa, post-apartheid, you still have a real conflict between black and white. And where we are in Durban, there's also a significant Indian population. There's conflicts between Zulu, the township, and people who live in the city. There's colored population. There's lots of conflicts. And kids, there's not a whole lot of programs or support systems for them. So the reception in South Africa was really, really positive. But I think that was more from, you know, people just wanted their kids to have access to programs, and who doesn't love sport?
Right.
So when my brother started knocking on doors, and also they're like, you don't really need a whole lot of stuff, at least when we were working, when we started out, you need a whole lot of certification. So he could just show up at a school and they say, all right, come on in, rather than who are you, why are you here, are you trained, are you certified, how long are you going to be here, they just say, all right, come on.
So you just showed up with a basketball and they're like, all right, sounds good to us.
Pretty much. And my brother Sean is really just a great coach and has tons of positive energy, and people really like him. And he's just, you know, he's a very creative person. So he was able, you know, let's say he's there in a school for an hour, you know, give a kid an hour of something they'd never had before and, you know, make it the most fun hour of their day or week or month. And so the response to Sean particularly was very good. And, you know, we knew just from hopefully having a little bit of common sense that it had to go beyond Sean. So the real tricky point is, hey, we know we have this concept that makes a lot of sense. We know that we can have an experience where you bring kids together from different sides, and at least at that moment, you know, the kids will play together and they'll have fun. They'll be given high fives and they'll smile. So we knew we could, we were pretty confident we could make that happen. The question is, you know, what happens deeper than that? Are we able to get the right people with us? What happens when the kids go home? What happens year to year? How do you grow it? I mean, the initial part, while it was maybe hard and risky for us too, you know, just because we had to dedicate time and resources and, you know, our good name and kind of starting this. And if you're in a conflict zone and you start something and you leave, you know, a lot of times you can do more harm than good.
Right.
But the mechanics of, you know, the initial bringing kids together and having to have a great time and breaking down barriers, I mean, we did it. We were able to, you know, again, the harder part was what comes next.
Got it. And so I'm curious also, because I'd imagine to do this well in a conflict zone, you have to be more than a good coach or more than someone who really likes sports. You also have to have some sort of training or be extremely talented at coaching people who are coming from such different places. So for the people who are doing this now, are you training them to do this? Like, how do you prepare someone who's like me, who played, you know, high school basketball and was never good enough to play at a higher level, but like has played a lot of sports, has played organized sports his entire life, but is probably not ready to coach in such a complicated situation?
So there's really two pieces to what we're doing. One is the sport piece, which is critically important. So kids are coming to play. They're coming to learn. They're coming to get better. They're coming to have fun. They're not coming to do peace. They're not even really at first coming because they are interested in, you know, getting to know the other side. They want to have fun. They want to play. So, and that's what we did really well early on, is that we knew how to coach, and we knew how to structure a program where kids were both learning how to play and having fun. And we did a pretty good job initially of just training local coaches, and some of them are already really good to, you know, to start with, but training coaches how to do this. The question was, all right, how do you add something to this around, you know, peace building, and that's particularly the context, and understanding all the risks and complexity of bringing, you know, people in conflict together. And so at first we kind of just winged it, to be honest. And, you know, made some mistakes early on, you know, most often about just kind of hiring people that weren't the right fit.
Right.
I think the key has been knowing that people that are from these communities know more than we ever could. So there's you have to be willing to give up some control to learn from people that are already there. And the real big moment for us came when people started feeling like this was theirs. So some of it that can be training. More of it is, you know, do you have people that have had, you know, life experiences and have emotional intelligence, that grew up in these places, that have the right relationships, you know, that have that kind of, you know, street smarts, that can get stuff done. So that's really the most important thing. You know, the training piece, you know, we've been able to develop over time with actually one really excellent partner called Arbinger, that we've worked with both to develop curriculum for the kids that helps them kind of have their own language and, you know, begin to see each other as human beings and really, build the courage and understanding of how to take what they've learned and bring it to their families and communities. And then from there, kind of train our coaches how to mentor and, how to model this in their own lives. And I'm reverse ordering it because this is how we actually did it.
Right.
And then how to use that to build an organizational culture that, you know, really, again, kind of sees, you know, all of the people in our program and staff as human beings, understands what drives people, as well as provide the right type of, you know, conflict-sensitive leadership development training that enables our coaches and staff to be able to, number one, do this work really well, but also, you know, spot challenges and issues and know where to go to help and have partnership, you know, organizations that are there for, you know, when really serious matters come up. So, you know, early on we winged it. We were lucky in that we both were able to bring together some really smart and committed locals, and then we found a great, you know, curriculum and training and then organizational culture partner in Arbinger.
One thing that I think, you know, reflecting back on my athletic career from being young age up through college, is every coach I think I ever had told me that a lot of the skills that I was learning would go beyond the field and would carry me through life. And I think one of the reasons that I was able to get to the level of competition that I was is because I was lucky enough to have a lot of great coaches with a good head on their shoulders and a good perspective on sport and life. What is the type of message, you talked about the type of people that you want in your organization that are connecting with the kids. What's the type of message, or what are the most important messages that you think kids in the program need to be hearing?
Honestly, I don't know if it's messages that they hear as much as what they see. So, you know, people talk a lot, and kids are really good at seeing through what's genuine and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when they see somebody that cares about them, when they see somebody kind of with an outward mindset, and someone that, you know, the values that they live by match what we're trying, you know, the message of the organization, what we're trying to achieve, then, you know, they have respect for that and they're willing to follow. Kids see, you know, through hypocrisy really quickly. So while we have kind of, you know, organization vision, mission, how we train people and way of being, the most important is are all of us living it? And if we are living it, our kids are much more likely to follow, look up to us, and model it than just kind of what we say.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm curious. I know that one of the hardest things to do in this field is, especially when you're working with kids, is to measure success and then tell the story of success later on, especially when it could be 15 years before someone is in a visible way translating what you've taught them into success. So do you have a good story you can share with us of someone who went through the program who has done something that can kind of lay out nicely a trajectory of how this works with a real human being and what this can do for someone?
Yeah, I mean, I've got lots, and, you know, we can talk a lot about measurement. It's something that I think as an organization we've got to really good at. In our field of peace building, you know, you see lots of organizations struggling with this mm-hmm. issue. I mean, I'd say a great example in Israel is not just of one person, but a group of people. We have several mixed teams of Israelis and Palestinians who now play in the Israeli National League. And in Israel, basketball is actually very competitive, very high level. And up until we started in the league a few years ago, no Palestinians, especially any from the Jerusalem area, were ever in the league. It was always all Jewish. And so we were able to, number one, put together a group of girls who, after a couple of years of practicing and getting to know one another, felt comfortable kind of coming together as a team. And, you know, these girls, at the beginning, you know, there's a real separation. And you see it over time as kids become teammates and they travel together and, you know, fight through adversity. They went from, you know, having some real issues to real kind of incredible friendships being formed where, you know, we had one of the girls had her bar mitzvah and she invited her Palestinian friends on the beach of Tel Aviv to celebrate it. And again, this doesn't happen there. You got girls sleeping in each other's houses, you know, texting each other to make sure they're safe. You have parents asking for the other. And May of 2014, these girls, it was an under 18 playoffs, and they advanced the championship game. But we've got this great video of the final seconds where one of our girls, about 4 seconds left, down one, gets a rebound and makes a shot and wins the game, wins the championship. And you see Israeli and Palestinian parents cheering together, stomping up and down, gathering in half court and celebrating. And I think, you know, symbolizing not just the accomplishment and how special that championship is, but, you know, what this symbolizes, you know, for their community and region long term. And that's really the magic of sport. It's not only you seeing this individual relationship change and, you know, really tight friendships being born and kids learning really valuable skills, but they're doing something where large groups of people are witnessing it. And whether you're talking about, you know, peace players or other kind of big events, I mean like something like Invictus, that the movie was made out of, the South African rugby team, you know, it just symbolizes, I think, great hope. So for us, when you can mix the both, again, that personal change with lots of people witnessing it, that's really, really powerful.
I'm really curious, just continuing with that point, of the type of transformation you've seen with the parents and with the communities and how that's being embraced. And if you could talk a little bit about how impactful it is to see adults learn from children and learn that they can put differences aside for sport, then maybe they can put differences aside for other parts of their life too.
Yeah, it's really, that's been really interesting, just that whole process of engaging parents. When we first started out, we actually, you know, purposely kind of stayed away from the parents because we were afraid. Mm-hmm. Now what we were doing was risky, and we just didn't know what the reaction would be, and in some locations, you know, weren't super clear on the mission of the organization or what we were trying to do. And also, you know, early, you know, in a lot of the locations that we work in, the parents aren't like American parents. They're not as present and hovering, so they're not always sure what their kids are up to.
Right.
But, you know, after a while, we realized, you know what? We have to engage the parents in order to really have that ripple effect and have this program be as impactful as it could be. So we started the process of both, again, giving the kids the tools to talk about the program and their personal transformations to their families and peers, but also having parents as, you know, volunteers and key actors in the actual program activities, to now have groups of teams, actually have mixed parent, you know, parents events, sports events in locations that we work in.
Hmm.
You know, having parents come to me, you know, with tears in their eyes talking about, you know, how much of an influence their kids are having on them. You know, when so-and-so, it's really hard when your kid talks about, let's say in Northern Ireland, your kid's Catholic and he talks about a Protestant as a friend and wants to have that kid over. What do you say, no?
Right.
And then, again, that move from, well, I see this, maybe this one kid as a human being, you know, and at the beginning, sometimes that's exception rather than, no, this person can be okay, can't all the other. And seeing the kids really force the parents' hands and saying, Molly, I'm learning about this. Mm-hmm. You know, why, you know, this person's a good friend, or this group of people are good people. What? Why shouldn't I think that way? And, you know, so maybe sometimes the parents, you know, aren't going to necessarily renounce their prejudice, their way of thinking, but what we've found is the parents don't always want their kids to think that way, even though they're not at first maybe willing to renounce it. So it's, you know, we get lots of different reactions, but a key in our growth and deepening has been both the kids' ability to engage parents and then our own setting up of activities and programs for parents to take the lead. And then what's been really special as well is seeing other organizations that we partner with kind of take this on. And, you know, us working, for example, in Northern Ireland with the Gaelic Athletic Association and Ulster Rugby and Irish Football, the Soccer Federation, mm-hmm. Federation in Northern Ireland, and work with them on a new project called the Game of Three Halves with a goal of where, you know, Protestant is mostly – rugby is mostly Protestant. The Gaelic sports are mostly Catholic. Soccer is both, but it kind of has their own leagues and separate structures. So this effort has been geared towards diversifying participant bases and training coaches to work with kids from both sides. But it's been led by the federations with peace players playing a role. And that's a huge sign of success for us, where it's not about us or our organization, and we're in a support role, and it's really, you know, bigger organizations like the ones I just mentioned taking a lead, and that really has an opportunity to touch everybody in Northern Ireland. So for us, you know, you look at impact and how we measure, there's, you know, number one, the personal transformation, it's two, it's the ripple effect to parents, peers, and communities, and then two, the institutional impact. So what, you know, what are institutional partners doing? Are other people taking this on? Our sports being integrated, you know, regionally. Those are the kind of different layers that we're looking at.
So it's interesting you bring up broader leagues, because I think, as someone who's a huge sports fan, I feel like the last couple of years, the the way the leagues have marketed themselves or the types of PR that, like, American professional sports leagues has been quite different. And I know the NFL has some serious struggles, but I know you actually work closely with the NBA, which seems like has been doing a great job. And I know that you have a few members of the NBA involved with the organization. So I'm curious, how much reception do you get from, like, American professional athletes? Like, are they interested in going on these trips abroad? Do they think, like, oh, this is something really cool that I would do in my own community? Like, is this something that you find professionals even are like, wow, this is a great project?
Yeah, we've gotten some great support from players and coaches and general managers in the NBA. I've got several board members. R.C. Buford is the general manager of the San Antonio Spurs. Steve Kerr is the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. Arne Tellem, who is the vice chairman of the Pistons, and Irina Pavlova with the Brooklyn Nets. So we've been able to get some really, and they're all just also wonderful, wonderful people, mm-hmm. Who kind of live this in their everyday lives as well. And that's been really important, having people with similar values.
Right.
And we've had the opportunity to have players over, and you know, it really helps, you know, with the kids, you know, seeing that, hey, this person who I watch play cares enough about this and about me to come and visit. And so it's really kind of special for our program to have that kind of involvement. And you know, the programs are very, very inspiring. I think, you know, players when they come and coaches when they come, you know, come find, you know, themselves having just really moving experiences and getting to know our kids and seeing the conditions sometimes they live in and the conflicts they're facing, right, and the challenges they overcome. And I think they're really, you know, I get excited about their ability to be part of it and to help and really to learn.
I can't let you get out of here without answering a selfish question. And obviously I said I'm a baseball fan and played baseball. And it seems like this type of model lends itself to a lot of other international sports, like such as soccer or maybe even baseball for parts of the world. What do you see as the potential for this to be expanded into other parts of the world dealing with other different difficult types of conflict?
Sure. So right now we have full-time programs. I mentioned Northern Ireland, South Africa, Israel, and Cyprus. But we also have a training arm that works in lots of places around the globe. We actually just got back from Ethiopia doing a project with Save the Children around both basketball and soccer. So we've worked with multiple sports. I think that, you know, that model of, you know, similar to Northern Ireland, working with the federations, most likely around kind of training and you know, doing some advocacy, is where our spot is when we're dealing with other sports. So I don't see us, you know, starting new Peace Players full-time programs with sports outside basketball, because that's kind of what we know, and there's a lot to do in that space. But looking at our training arm, which is called SPIN, you know, working with organizations that use a multiple sports, you know, it's not just basketball that has the ability to unite and, you know, bring people together and change perceptions. I mean, I think, you know, all team sports do that. So our vision is to work with lots of these organizations and bigger institutions to kind of take this on and expand it around the globe, again, using sports to bring people together. There's a lot of the potential hasn't even been close to being tapped. And then in the United States, we're starting to do more work around helping to build bridges between law enforcement and communities. I've been involved with a project in Kansas City with the police FW there, and we're in the process of actually pretty close to starting a few new projects with that focus.
It's interesting because actually before we even got on the call, Drew and I were talking about it, and one of the things he said was he feels like a lot of this model actually just based on internal domestic issues in this country could actually be quite useful and really helpful, especially with kids.
Yeah, the trick when you run an organization, the trick is when we have these big visions, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can get in trouble by trying to do too much or trying to have too wide of a focus. So our challenge is we want to do what we're doing really well. we do want to grow and scale, but we got to be smart about how we do it. And I think this area of, you know, helping to build bridge between, you know, law enforcement and, you know, people in their neighborhoods is one that fits us well. And it's, you know, it's also very specific. It's a big challenge. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, there's not a whole lot of other work being done there. I mean, there's right. police athletic league who do a really good job, but, you know, I think, you know, we see really potential in PPI and space and PPI playing a role. So that's where we, you know, there's tons of opportunity. Now, unfortunately, we'll never be out of a job. So our task is to find where we can be most impactful and how we can work with other players, you know, to help them do this type of work as well.
Well, and I would also say, just having played around on your website and read a bunch of articles about the organization, I'd recommend to anyone listening to go check out some of the other media that's been created or some of the explanations of the type of work you're doing, because I know you have two sports fans here who are very inspired by it and who really think it's amazing, and who, if you ever start a program in New York, you've got two people who would love to volunteer to coach.
That's good to know. Well, one of our partners is the Brooklyn Nets, so keep an eye on that. And then for the listeners, our website is at peaceplayersintl.org. And it's a good site, and there's lots of great media. We've been fortunate enough to have some really good publicity and some great and inspiring stories. So encourage everyone to take a look.
That's great. It's definitely well-deserved publicity. You know, today you see a lot of headlines with FIFA or track and field. Or the NFL, so it's nice to find an organization that's really doing great work and making a meaningful impact.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Bye. Thank you for listening to another episode of Multifaithful. Special thank you to Brandon Tuohy for joining us on the podcast and for such inspiring use of sports, and for, I just really had a blast talking. It was great. Thanks to Drew for joining me and for being a good friend, both of the podcast and just of me personally. Special thank you to Brian Young for editing from abroad. Luis Suatos' music is from the Upmany Film. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please be in touch at spiritual.life@nyu.edu. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We look forward to having you back for another episode.